everyone, and welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR-LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Alan Hudson, and I'm a guest host of Inspire Indeed, a weekly show dedicated to discussing community issues and hearing from the people who are working to address them. Our guests on the show certainly inspire us to become even more engaged in our community, and we hope that it does the same for all of you tuning in today. Our guest today is Mira Signer, the Executive Director of National Alliance on Mental Illness of Virginia. The agency's mission is to promote recovery and improve the quality of life of Virginians with serious mental illness through support, education, and advocacy. Welcome, Mira.
Thank you for having me.
First, share with us a little bit about the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Virginia, or NAMI for short, and how it got started.
Sure, absolutely. Well, we are a statewide 501c3 nonprofit organization based here in Richmond, and we were essentially formed in 1985, so about 30 years ago, by parents and family members of people with mental illness who, frankly, were pretty angry, and they were frustrated, and they were kind of tired of the mental health system not working for them and not working for their loved ones. So they really wanted to bring about change. Families got together, started forming support groups. They created educational programs. They worked on challenging daily stigma of mental illness. And they also became active in the legislature with changing laws. So they lobbied the legislature to change laws and increase funding. But our roots actually go back a little bit further than that because we're part of a national movement. We do have ties to a national organization called the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and that was actually formed in the 70s. About 1975, people from all over the country got together in Madison, Wisconsin, because that was centrally located. And again, you know, the common theme was just being really tired and fed up. And, you know, families were, they were tired of being blamed for their loved one's mental illness. They know that they didn't do anything wrong, and they were, you know, kind of sick of getting the door slammed on them. So it really was a grassroots movement that bubbled up, and we were glad to incorporate in the 1980s here.
That's fantastic. I noted 13 distinct programs on your webpage. Tell us about one or two of your direct service programs.
Sure, absolutely. Well, we really engage in a lot of education and support. That's really kind of where our sweet spot is in terms of what we've gone through and the experiences that we have. So just a couple of them. Our main program is called Family to Family. What that is it's a 12-week educational program, and it teaches the basics of how to understand what your loved one is going through, kind of an overview of mental illnesses, and also coping skills, how to take care of yourself, how to navigate the system, and how to be an advocate for your family member. Kind of a neat thing about it is that it's taught by family members and caregivers, people who have sort of been there, done that, and then have gotten to a point in their lives where they want to give back. So they're trained, and then they're kind of dispatched to teach this course. And we're really very proud and happy to say that actually just last month it was recognized by SAMHSA, which is the federal mental health agency, in their registry of national evidence-based programs. So we know that it's a program that works, it's effective, and it really gives people the tools that they need.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks. It was a long time coming, and we're really proud of that and happy to be part of it. Another neat program is, it's called In Our Own Voice. And the basics of that program is really about education and stigma reduction. So this program involves two people who have had personal experience with mental illness. And they really go out and they tell their story to any number of audiences. It could be hospitals, it could be law enforcement officers, civic groups, faith-based groups, schools, colleges, universities, you name it. And it's an interactive educational program that really kind of drives home a message of hope and recovery. And they kind of walk you through what their experience was like, what their dark days were like, and what they see for themselves in the future. And it's very much a program to address myths and reduce stigma.
Wow, that's fantastic. Tell us about some of your advocacy work.
Sure, absolutely. Well, our advocacy work pretty much focuses on systems change. We envision a mental health system that's easy to navigate. It has an array of services that meet the needs of adults and children with mental health needs, and one that doesn't have barriers to accessing it based on your level of income or the type of insurance you have. So really, we're focused on systems change, and we do this in a couple of different ways. We engage in lobbying and direct legislative advocacy through the legislature. We participate in coalitions and task forces and educational efforts. We work on educating not only the general public, but also people who are in positions to make changes. And, you know, for us in general, it's very important that people and families who have been directly impacted by mental illness and have navigated and accessed the mental health system, that they have a seat at the table, because their voice really matters, and they have a lot to say and can impact the system. So really, part of our job is kind of identifying what those tables are and where we need to have a seat at the table and to bring our voice and our experience to the work.
That's great. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR LP 97.3 FM. You can hear previous shows on our blog, inspireindeed.blogspot.com. Today we're talking with Mira Signer of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Virginia. Mira, what is your website where people can get more details?
Our website is www.namivirginia.org, and Virginia is all spelled out.
Thank you. Mental illness has historically been an overlooked issue, even in the nonprofit sector. Is that changing?
It is changing, but there definitely is still a very high stigma. There's a lot of stigma and kind of secrecy that people and communities in general still face and still deal with. But, you know, I think the good thing is that, especially due to recent national events, that has really brought mental health kind of to the forefront, and it's a little bit more prominent kind of in our social consciousness, just in terms of how deeply mental health issues kind of permeate pretty much everybody's lives. And if you think about it, about 1 in 4 people are impacted in some way by mental illness. So it's no wonder that, you know, that it is something really that has a pretty wide-reaching impact. You know, we found that leadership really makes a difference. When leaders are willing to stand up and talk about mental illness, that really says something, and that kind of peels back some of those layers of stigma. A couple, you know, recent things to point to. Actually, within the Obama administration just recently, they launched what's being called the National Dialogue on Mental Health. And really, that's a huge nationwide initiative that's involving NAMI, it's involving Boys and Girls Clubs, it's involving veterans hospitals, many, many partners to kind of promote conversation and dialogue and more understanding about mental health. So we really think that that's a positive thing. Also, you know, many actresses and famous people are kind of using their positions as well-known people in the media and kind of in daily lives. Actress Glenn Close, she launched an initiative called Bring Change to Mind. It's a wonderful interactive program. There's a terrific video on YouTube that folks should check out. And she did that in response to her family's experience with mental illness. You know, and I have to say that people confide in me all the time. You know, they tell me about what they've experienced or what their family has experienced. And sometimes it's, you know, the first time that somebody's ever said anything or disclosed anything. So, it would be really nice for them to feel supported and able to be more open. So while definitely there seems to be a little bit more of a conversation, there still is, you know, definitely a high stigma around mental illness.
As a society, do you see us becoming more comfortable with this conversation?
I would like to think so. I mean, I would like to think that it is more acceptable, and it is, you know, people are able to talk more about mental illness, and it is becoming part of, you know, kind of our everyday dialogue. But the reality is that people still face backlash in the workplace. They face, you know, fear of discrimination and so forth. So there still is a lot of work to be done on that.
How do you balance people's need for privacy around issues on mental illness with helping to share your agency's message?
Well, it's always important to ensure a person's right to privacy and ensure that it's their choice, specifically, you know, whether and when to disclose a personal experience with mental illness. You know, the reality is that it is very difficult for a lot of people, and people do fear, you know, for example, discrimination in the workplace or a backlash of some sort or social isolation from family and friends. You know, so that being said, you know, privacy is extremely important, and, you know, people have the right to privacy, not only through laws such as HIPAA, but we also do feel that it's really important for people to be as open as they feel comfortable, you know, in their own time and in their own way, because really it's part of the recovery process. It's part of healing, you know, taking charge of your own illness, being open about it, sharing that information, you know, not only with your doctors and healthcare providers, but also people around you, like your family members and friends, who can hopefully offer support to you. But it is a catch-22. You know, we need people to, you know, kind of come out and share their experiences in order to fight the stigma. But at the same time, there really is still a tremendous stigma. So it's, you know, it is a little bit of a catch-22, but fortunately, you know, more people talking about it and just kind of more awareness in general is helping.
Do you have some stories about how your work has made a difference? And, you know, I'm thinking there must be some very powerful stories that you hear on a probably almost daily basis. Are there a couple or three of those you could share with us?
Absolutely. A couple good stories. One, I'll call her Hannah. This was a young woman who, she was in treatment for many, many years. And in fact, she was hospitalized for serious depression. And while she was in the hospital, she saw an In Our Own Voice presentation. That was a program that I was telling you about earlier in the show that we operate. It's an educational and an anti-stigma program and really has a message of hope. So she was hospitalized and recovering and getting her medication stabilized and saw this presentation, and it really gave her a message of hope and a feeling of hope. And after she was discharged and when she was kind of getting settled back home, she started going to some of our support groups. They're called connection support groups with her peers. Well, fast forward about a year later, she became trained as a support group facilitator, and now she runs a monthly support group for her own peers. So that's something that, you know, really kind of came full circle, and I think is just, you know, kind of a powerful message of support and hope and recovery. And another story that I really like and I think about a lot is a man who had a very serious episode for many, many years with bipolar disorder, and he got into trouble with the law while in a very psychotic state. Well, he was a firefighter. That was his profession. That was his day job. He had to serve time in jail, and after going back to the community, he became involved with our organization and started going to support groups and started going to meetings. And he now serves as a trainer and mentor for others who are dealing with mental illness. And he tells his story to law enforcement officers to help them understand what it's like to be on the other end and what it's like to be in that very severe psychotic state. And he actually now attends national conferences. He speaks. He shares his story. So, you know, again, just an example of what it can take for somebody to, you know, kind of go from the very depths of despair into kind of very hopeful, positive force for change.
Wow, that's great. Do you have another story that comes to mind?
Well, in terms of advocacy, I thought it would be kind of neat to tell you about a couple of hard-fought victories that took many, many years in the making. One was achieved in 2008. This was known as parity, and it was a federal law that was enacted in 2008. And basically what this law does is it requires mental health to be treated on par or equally as physical health. So in other words, if an insurance company will provide coverage for physical health issues, then they have to provide coverage that's equal for mental health issues. And it doesn't sound like that's really, you know, rocket science, but it really was. It took about 20 years of really intense advocacy and people telling their stories and people talking about the challenges that they had with getting equal treatment for something like medication or therapy visits or hospital-based treatment that we wouldn't really give a second thought to in terms of diabetes or heart care treatment or things like that. So, you know, we know that advocacy really works. We engage in a tremendous amount of advocacy here in Virginia as well. Recently, we have successfully lobbied the legislature for more funding for the mental health care system, specifically services for children's crisis services, for permanent supportive housing, and also for what are called jail diversion programs, which are basically services that divert a person from jail, a person with mental illness from jail, into appropriate treatment, which is important because about 24% of people in Virginia's jail have a mental illness. So, you know, we know that advocacy really works, and it can take a long time. But I was very pleased this past June, take a tour of one of the jail diversion programs in Henrico at Henrico Doctors Hospital that was launched through these advocacy efforts and through new funding that was allocated. So it does take a long time, but we know that that advocacy works.
That's great. As you visited that particular jail diversion program, tell us what you saw.
Well, I think the thing that really stuck out to me was a collaboration is what I saw between different entities, different professionals, different agencies that don't historically work together, but very much have a stake in the same issues. You have law enforcement, you have mental health professionals, you have emergency room doctors, all coming together to really identify a pretty serious issue and to put, you know, resources together and time and energy and efforts, you know, for the good of the person with mental illness who's in a crisis and their family, and, you know, making sure that person does not get put in jail, but instead gets routed to the treatment that they need. So what I saw was, you know, lots of different people from different backgrounds and different fields coming together very successfully in a partnership, around really a common mission and common goal.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. Today we're talking with Mira Signer of National Alliance on Mental Illness of Virginia. Mira, tell us, who are some of your community partners that assist you with your work?
Sure. There are lots of them, and we're pleased to work with many different partners around a number of different goals. The Veterans Administration, which are the hospitals that serve veterans who have served in, you know, different wars such as Iraq and Afghanistan. We partner with the VA hospitals in Richmond and Hampton on programming and support groups for returned veterans and also their families, because there are many unique and important issues that veterans and their families deal with. On housing issues, we partner with the Virginia Coalition to End Homelessness on not only educational efforts, but also legislative efforts in lobbying for funding and new initiatives that can, you know, in communities and on the ground, have an impact on actual housing that's available. The Campaign for Children's Mental Health, We are a steering committee member of that campaign, which focuses on specific services and the child mental health system. And then also, I have to say, our local affiliates, part of our organization and kind of the uniqueness of our organization is that we have 26 grassroots community-based organizations throughout the state, and they are kind of the they're the folks who put on local support groups, and they do a lot of the outreach and educational programs. So we work obviously very closely with them on a number of initiatives.
That's fantastic. Mira, tell us, where do you hope the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Virginia is in 10 years?
Well, I'll tell you, in 10 years, three particular things come to mind. First, a lot of people come to us at a time of crisis. Their family's in crisis. They're up on the internet in the middle of the night, you know, researching and looking for information. So we'd like to, for people to know about us ahead of time. So that's, you know, really kind of that awareness and prevention aspect of mental illness. So we have a vision and something that we like to talk about as becoming a household name. We want to be there for people kind of before they need us and in a more of a preventative aspect. The other thing is that we are envisioning this next generation of advocates and leaders. So we want to have kind of a very strong generation of people, young people who are ready to take this movement and kind of carry it into the future. So we've actually invested resources in kind of our youth outreach and identifying and training youth leaders who have experienced mental illnesses so that they can be the advocates that we're turning to, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. And then I think really the third thing is advocacy and public policy and systems change. You know, there's been a lot of work that's made a difference over the past 5, 10, 15 years, but we know that there's still a great deal more to be done, and we hope to continue impacting laws and policies and funding so that we can have a mental health system that is more effective and more responsive.
That's great. Mira, tell us, how can listeners get involved? And specifically, are there ways to volunteer for NAMI?
Yes, we are always looking for people who want to get involved. We welcome people who want to get involved and volunteer. We're looking for anywhere from office volunteers. People can give us a call, go on our website, which is www.namivirginia.org, and find out how to get involved. Check out our programs. See if there are programs out there that interest you, that you want to learn more about, that you'd like to get involved with. We have lots of resources that people can download for free. So, take a look at those and see if there's something there that you want to learn more about, or let us know if you need any of those resources. Part of what we do is make them available to the public. And we have a walk coming up in October, right after Mental Illness Awareness Week, which is a week that is recognized nationally. And we do have a walk coming up on October 19th. It's in Innsbruck here in Richmond, and that helps to raise awareness and funds. And what we have found is that the walk is a great vehicle for people to tell their story, because as they're reaching out, it gives them the way to talk about, well, this is what I've been through, and this is why this is important to me, and I'm walking in the NAMI walk. And again, all that information and more can be found on our website, which is www.namivirginia.org.
Fantastic. Ending with the beginning, Mira, tell us, how did you get into the nonprofit field originally?
Well, I've had a love and an interest for the nonprofit world for many years, and beginning in college as an undergrad, I was exposed to nonprofits through community service learning at James Madison University, where I went to undergrad, and I really just kind of fell in love because it was clear that nonprofits could be very flexible, and they could kind of easily react to what was going on in the community. And you could also kind of nimbly and easily forecast, where you wanted to go. I thought that it was, a really good way to be creative and to, you know, kind of take charge and figure out, you know, ways to really make a difference and be kind of a force for social change. And that really just kind of carried through my graduate school work. And I just, you know, learned more about nonprofits and became more involved. And I've been lucky enough to be with NAMI Virginia for about 6 years and have really learned quite a bit and have taken advantage of the nonprofit sector and different partners that are willing to work with us and that we get involved with.
Thank you, Mira. I'm thrilled that you were able to join us today, and I'm thrilled that all of you tuning in today have been able to join us too. Also, a big thank you to our fellow volunteers here at WRIR-LP, including Andrew Hawes and Jay Westerman, who help out with the technical side of getting this live show on the air, and Brittany Tracy, who makes sure to keep the Inspire Indeed blog spot up to date at inspireindeed.blogspot.com, and Jesse Johnson, who you'll find down here managing the soundboard. If you want to learn more how you can join our team or donate to the station, go to WRIR.org. We count on your support to keep this local voice on the airwaves. And finally, a big thanks today to Elaine Summerfield for inviting me in as a guest host. My name is Alan Hudson, and you have been listening to Inspire Indeed. Thank you for tuning in today.